Season 3, Episode 15, Head Case. It opens up with Simone and Sipowicz walking into a crime scene where the DOA had his head cut off and then placed in his lap.
There's also a regular police officer standing outside, and she doesn't look good, Kirk. She's looking a little sick.
Sipowicz and Simone start joking around with her to make her feel a little bit better about the fact that this guy was decapitated.
Yeah, they like chum it up when a dude has his head in his crotch. It's a little weird.
They make jokes like, oh, what was that story about the headless Ichabod Crane?
Yeah, like the headless horseman.
And then after they laugh a bit, they just go,
man, I thought it was the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
And then after they laugh about it for a minute, he goes, oh, she'll be all right. Which is like,
Well, because she cracks a smile. She does, like, after they, like, talk about and, like, joke a little bit, she's like, oh, it's okay that I'm in a room with a dude with his head cut off. This is normal now because we made a few little jokes and we moved on with life.
After that, we have the intro. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the theme song for NYPD Blue, and this is Kirk and Kyle talking on NYPD Blue Balls. This is one of the first times ever you saw me press the button for the theme song.
I know. I think it's the only time that I've seen you press the button for the theme song.
Anyway, we come back from the intro, and there's a scene with the doorman named Gus, and he's a little bit too chummy with Simone about information.
But no, he's too chatty. Yeah, he's like, he won't shut up.
And he keeps saying, like, I don't know if this is going to help your case or whatnot, but
he keeps telling him to pursue certain angles.
And keeps talking about how he's
Spanish boys, shit like that.
And he says things to him like, well, are you going to take that angle of the investigation? Pretending like he knows anything about what they're doing.
Yeah. It's funny because Simone normally is like super laid back with people, even if they're like quirky.
Mm-hmm.
But you could tell he was annoyed with him.
He's a little annoyed with the doorman.
He was annoyed with the doorman.
So they come back to the house. I'm going to separate the cases just for convenience.
Because we have the decapitated man.
We have the porn star caller guy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The porn star comes in. Jessica Del Rio. Vanessa Del Rio.
Vanessa Del Rio.
Vanessa Del Rio.
And is there another? Well, there's another story about Andy Jr.
Oh, that's right. Andy comes to visit his dad.
So when
doesn't that happen like halfway through, though?
It does
happen. Like a small minor story. It's a setup.
It's a setup halfway
through.
NYPD
Blue does that a lot. Halfway through a story, they'll bring something in to set up a later thing.
But when they come back to the house, Lieutenant is getting calls from like the Gay Action Defense League.
Yeah.
Because the dude that was killed is a homosexual and...
But he has a lot of clout because he's a professor, right?
Yeah, he's a professor at NYU.
Yeah.
So he's getting calls from them.
High society. Type of dude.
Sipowicz says NYU professor that likes to get hit in the hiney because that's how Sipowicz rolls.
Yeah, but he's not like a homophobe or anything. Misunderstood, right? Isn't that what you and Dad say?
First off, me and Dad don't say anything when it comes to Sipowicz. I say what I think, and Dad says what he thinks, and most of the time we disagree. That's basically how it goes.
Fair enough.
They have to go to tell this DOA's mother that he died. His name's Daniel Reese. So they go to Mrs. Reese's house.
Do they go to tell her that he's dead, or do they go to like try to get information?
They do both.
Because I felt like to me they were just more going to get information, not necessarily tell her that.
Well,
I don't know. It's a small.
When they head there, there is a mystery to this because a woman called the police precinct with an anonymous tip saying that someone may be hurt in this apartment building.
True.
So they assume, they don't assume, but they wonder if it's her, so they ask her that. They ask her, are you the person that called for your son? Because you knew that he had had been living with some ne'er-do-well or some gentleman, because she mentions that he had some dude in her place that he thought he was going to get rid of.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So when she called him and the gentleman answered the phone, she was like, "Why haven't you gotten rid of him?" And he's like, "I'm going to be getting rid of him tonight," and whatever.
Yeah.
She is a famous face, I'll have you know. She is Anne Haney.
Yep.
Who was the old woman in Mrs. Doubtfire.
She was the lady that was checking up on Robin Williams, right? Like, to make sure he was, like, working and doing what he was supposed to be doing.
And she was also in Liar Liar as Jim Carrey's secretary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm assuming she has now passed. I didn't actually look up that information, which made me feel bad.
Why do you assume that?
What? Why do I assume she's dead?
Yeah.
Because she was old when this was playing.
Okay. I mean, she wasn't that old. I think she just looked old.
She's pretty old. Okay. I mean, do you think she's still alive?
Yes.
You think she's still alive?
Yes.
All right. Let's find out.
I think she's still alive and kicking it.
This will also give me a chance to make sure I said her name right. Anne Haney.
Haney.
She died May 26th, 2001.
How old was she then?
She was 67.
Oh, so she didn't die that old. She died pretty young.
Yeah, but she was 67 17 years ago.
Okay, so I had 17. She would have been 84?
Yeah.
That could happen. There's a lot of people who live to be 84. Isn't the life expectancy of a woman like 80-something?
Fair enough, but the point is, I simply thought she must be dead.
I'm sorry, did I come at you with numbers and you lost the game? Okay,
you didn't come
on.
At me with anything. Did I come at you with
anyway,
numbers?
She's a famous face, but she's a good actress because
she does a good job.
Yeah, this is a dramatic role, and she was good at it.
Margaret Reese, her son had died. She keeps asking about this car because they both have their names on it. Throughout this storyline, every time she gets mentioned, she acts. She acts about the car.
She asks about the car.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And as the story goes on, they start looking at former classmates. They try to go with any gay club kids angles.
Well, but then to a callback to the doorman, he brings the guy he suspected.
Yeah, because the doorman remembers one dude specifically, and out of nowhere, when they come back to the house, the doorman is with that guy on the bench, the welcome bench.
He's like, "Hey, I found him. He was like unloading a truck on this street, so I just grabbed him and told him to come in," something like that.
And there's really this,
and it annoys the shit out of
Simone,
quite
a bit. He
ain't having it at all,
and. Because he asked him, "Well, what did you tell him about the crime scene?"
Yeah, because if he did do it, you're giving him a heads up.
You're giving him a heads up
what
information.
They know, and they don't have the advantage.
And it turns out this guy seems pretty legit.
Too legit to quit?
He basically says, no, his deal is he goes to these bars and like he follows or takes somebody to the bathroom and then straight up goes, "Hey, do you want to come back to my house and smoke pot?"
Well, no, he gets him to smoke pot in the bathroom. Isn't that the deal? He asks if you want to smoke a joint.
Mm-hmm. And then he takes him back to his place.
You smoke, he doesn't. And then he like asks if you want to come back for more. And then, you know, he makes his move and you either go for it or you don't.
And if you don't go for it, then he just lets you smoke the weed. And the guy gets a little upset when the implication is that the dude's gay.
As most men who are gay who are trying to hide it do.
So you think that dude's gay? His name was Joey. Do you think Joey was gay in the interview? He was gay and he's hiding it?
Well, did he say he did stuff? No, he said he didn't. He told him to stop and he smoked the pot.
And he has a girlfriend and he brought some of that pot to her.
Do you know how many people have girlfriends that are gay?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I am merely posing the question.
It just is like, why do men get so offended if they're called gay?
Well, I don't get offended if I'm called gay.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I'm secure enough in my masculinity.
Some people aren't. Some people are also hiding the fact that they're gay, and they get really freaked out by it.
I was just asking if you thought Joey was, in fact, a homosexual. Well,
no, because I believed when he... I mean, I didn't get any more evidence, because then he wasn't a suspect anymore.
No. He eventually... He's also not that great of an actor, no offense to that guy.
If I could have got more evidence, I could have made my judgment. Like, I would have asked, like, hey, did you smoke this pot?
For half a second, I thought you were going to say, I was going to ask him, hey, you suck dick. And just see if he answers it straight up. So they get that's the way this Daniel character rolls. He's looking for dudes at bars by asking if they want to smoke pot, then taking them home, and then seeing if they're
trying to get some, and then if he does, great. If he doesn't, it's okay.
There's more bars and there's more dudes.
Yep.
This is the part in their investigation where Andy Jr. just randomly shows up, it looks like.
Yeah, because Sipowicz is waiting on the phone, and Bobby was going to go do something. And then he walks in, and he goes, oh, I didn't know you were coming. And then Andy J is like, no, it's more of like a surprise stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They get a call from Reese's mother. A uniform cop dropped off his wallet to her place.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Yeah, that's when that happens.
That's a weird moment where they just get a call, hey, a random police officer dropped off my son's wallet. So they go down to check it out.
Yeah, they're super annoyed.
And when they check it out, the desk sergeant at that precinct is a gentleman named Richard Grant. He's a large black gentleman. He is the cab driver in Big Lebowski.
He's also in
Rocky Five.
He's also in Deadwood.
And he's also in Deadwood.
He plays a really interesting character. All of these seasons, they all run together to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's a returning character.
Yeah, he shows up a bunch of times.
Has he already showed up?
Yeah, he was in the episode when...
Dorner, right?
No, that's later.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Spoilers.
Because there is that one, but there's also the one where Andy Jr. gets a caller for drugs.
Yeah.
And
then
he's in that precinct, and Andy goes to talk to him, and he pisses off the desk sergeant.
I remember. Okay. Yeah. Later on, he's back at Dorn. Okay.
I think there was a reference to it, because in this episode, when he goes to use the phone behind the desk, the desk sergeant goes, use the one in the squad room.
Yeah.
Kind of like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, which is kind of like...
It's a dick move.
Yeah.
It's a dick power move.
They
find out from this uniform officer that they picked up this black dude who was like running around in the street without underwear flashing his genitalia.
Yeah, what I liked about that is they, like, Simone and Sipowicz have this like aha moment. Like, this is our guy, because they both look at each other and go, our suspect took his pants off. He took his underwear off in the apartment. But they both have this, like, moment where their eyes lock and they're like, yeah, we got him. But it's like, it's just a silly line. This is kind of fun. It was funny to me.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird connection to the murder, but they get the arrest record. They find out he has a sister, and they put down her address. And no. He tried to call her to get him out of jail, and she just didn't respond.
But didn't he show up at her place, too?
Yeah,
she talks about how like she wouldn't let him in, so they talked through the door.
Yeah, because she was scared of him, and she mentions that he's like mentally unwell and not fit.
Yeah,
and she's now scared of him. Yeah. So she essentially.
But he used to be an intelligent person.
Yeah, he was going to NYU. They find out that he knows this DOA because the DOA was once his professor.
Yeah, and he was majoring in philosophy.
He rolled up to her house and dropped off a car that happens to be the DOA's car.
Nah.
It really seems like it's going to be him.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because when they get back to the station house and they run into Fancy, Fancy goes, oh, our guy's in there. Sipowicz goes, is he crazy? And then they talk for a little bit, and then Fancy goes, he says he's going to confess one time And then he's not going to speak for 4 years, 7 months or whatever. 4 years, 9 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think it's four. I wrote it down. 4 years and 7 months.
Yeah.
I think Sipowicz rolls up to him and says, is he the real deal? And he's like, he doesn't seem like he's messing around. They go to have the interrogation or the confession.
And they get a camcorder to record him, and then they get Cohen there, the DA.
And the guy starts telling what happened. He was a bit of a drifter. He stopped going to the shelters because he didn't like it there. Ended up at a gas station to try to get work. Mr. Reese showed up at the gas station, got him some food. And he said, basically, he wasn't going to let me live with him.
Yeah, he wouldn't invite him back, and that made him mad.
So he found his address through the phone book and just showed up.
Remember phone books?
I do remember phone books. Now they're just those things that really strong guys rip in half.
I guess, like, a phone book is good for, like, a motel or something. Let's say you need to find something in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, let's just say, like, something happened and you're, like, the middle of nowhere. A phone book's helpful for, like, you to find what's, like, the closest, like, tailor or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you don't need it anymore.
No, not at all.
Especially if you got the internet.
It's weird because I have to keep reminding myself there are rural places that don't have internet, like, immediately available.
And, like, a book that has, like, everyone's phone number, and it just sounds super weird to me now.
And it almost seems like a violation, and then I remember, oh, wait, everybody just puts up their shit on the internet.
Well, especially because now your phone number can be linked to, like, everything. Anyways, I don't know why we're talking about this right now.
It's a weird conversation to have, for sure, but... He clearly basically forced his way into this guy's house. And then the guy turns on Reese because he knew in his mind...
He was trying to have sex with him? Is that why he's... I thought Reese had made an advance on him. And he was like, back off. And it like triggered something in him. That's what I thought.
I think...
But
yeah.
I could be wrong.
Well, because he mentions in the... It's also a really good scene. The guy who plays the crazy guy.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm copying you, but
his name's Monty Sharp.
Yeah, that guy was really good. That's one of my favorite episodes because of the way that like monologue, that monologue-ish scene that he has where he has like really long answers. He was really good in it, and it was really entertaining.
Because they say he's a crazy person, and when he sits down, he says, "I didn't like the shelters because I don't like how people live." And then I went to a gas station. He's like, and then I was, I died and was resurrected by pyrotechnics and the Holy Spirit.
Exquisite, like, yeah, it's a really weird explanation.
And then as he goes on, it becomes clear because he says that I knew what that guy was. He says the F word. For homosexuals, really faggot.
It's like faggoty, fag, fag, fag.
Yeah, like at one like point,
it was really.
At one point, he straight up goes
like cheerful way to say it. Like he was like really angry, and he's like, "That guy was that guy was just a faggoty, fag, fag, fag."
He says it. It's not the same tone, but he says it the way like you'd expect Jack on Will and Grace to say it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
Like, but that was the second time he said it. The first time he says it, he mentions like, "Well, he was a fag." And they're all like, really? And they're like, explain. He's
he
like,
says it three times.
Three or twice?
Yeah, because then at the end, he's like talking really like quietly. And he's like, and he kind of, and I ripped his head off. He like screams it. He says, I ripped his head off.
Oh, yeah.
He says it very angrily. So I think it like, he like builds up to it.
In that interrogation, he starts out and you know he's crazy. And then he starts having a conversation about what happened.
Well, he basically calls himself Jesus Christ, right?
Yeah, he says, I am the Lord God Almighty. Yeah. I am the God Almighty. There was a moment where I was like, okay, he said that crazy thing, but he's talking very normally right now.
Yeah, he was very coherent in what he was saying. And there are crazy people who are coherent.
Yeah, like most serial killers and whatnot. He's very articulate, and it seems like he's not that crazy. And then, once he mentions that the dude is a homosexual, then he gets, like, really angry at the idea that, like, well, I'm not gay, so I cut his head off.
Yeah.
And then he talks about making him take his clothes off and going into his chair and how he's like the big bad mojo man, I think he called him at one point. And then he also talks about how he picked up that phone call from his mom.
Yeah, and she was a bitch.
And he didn't like how she was...
But see, the way I think they show you he's crazy is during when he's talking about all that, he's like being really calm. He's like, yeah, and then that bitch picked up the phone, blah, blah, blah. And then, but he's like talking, he's like, yeah, you know, and like, he had a good heart. And then he's like, because I felt it when I stuck my hand down his throat after I cut his head, off.
Yeah,
and so,
I
like,
wrote that down.
And so, like, but he says it so monotone that he's just saying it like it's like, oh, part of the story. And I think that's to show you that he's really crazy. Because there's a part where I feel like he's really not crazy. And he was putting on a show. And it's, I'll tell you when. It's later.
Because after they get the confession, which I made a joke while we were watching it. I said, I think we got it. Like, because...
Yeah,
because
he's just like... Because that last... Oh, yeah, because that last part, he screams. He, like, screams, and he's, like, really intense about ripping that head off. And you were like, oh, you're like, we got it. Like, you don't like this gay
because, man. Because what's really uncomfortable is Michael Cohen's... Michael Cohen?
No, it's Cohen. I don't know if his name's Michael. If it is, then did the NYPD Blue predict the worst lawyer in the world?
Oh, that's his name. I forgot. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's Michael.
ADA Cohen.
Yeah. Well, what is... Because Kirkendall...
I'll find it right
and
now.
And him have a relationship. Leo.
Leo. ADA Leo Cohen. Cohen. Mm-hmm. Leo Cohen...
Just had to think Jewish for a second.
Jesus.
It's true. He's Jewish in the show.
They cut to him. They always cut to the detectives and him during the confession. And like when they cut to him after he said, I ripped it and I cut his fucking faggot head off. Like I cut his faggot head off. Like you look at ADA Cohen and I feel like he just wanted to be like, so we got it and we're out of here. Like he just wanted to pack it up and get the
Well, and also it was kind of crazy because ADA Cohen was like, the things he was hearing, you would have thought he was watching, like, videos that showed, like, people, like, getting in auto accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like what were those called? Like
Faces of Death?
Faces of Death. Like, it was just, like, gnarly injuries and people being, like, ripped apart. You'd think he would have been watching that. But it was just, like, no, a crazy man describing, like, pretty intense shit. But it's nothing to be, like, like he was about to, like, faint.
Yeah. And then when they get done with the confession.
Like, he prosecutes... shit out of this fictional fucking precinct all the time, and they have some intense cases, so it's not like this is new to him either, you know what I mean? Like, he gets some intense, weird shit.
He's the first one to talk when they're walking down the stairs, and he basically says to the guys, like, how do you deal with this after hearing something like that? And Sipowicz makes a joke, he's like, no, I tend to feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah. But Sipowicz is also being a pain in the ass because he thinks his son... Because when his son visits him, his son says he has to talk to him about something, and it's about the Air Force. So Sipowicz thinks that he got in trouble, and mm-hmm. Sipowicz will only think about the worst things, and so it's affecting. You know, he's such a like a emotional roller coaster; it affects his work. So
when he thinks something happened, he thinks the worst, and then he makes it everybody else's problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he never just, like, keeps his cool. Sipowicz, who's having a tough time, he gets stopped at the entrance at the front desk because, meanwhile, during the middle of this episode, they allow the DOA's mother to go see the car because she flips a bitch in the squad room about seeing the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she's like, I have to see the car. I have to see it. He's like, yeah, well, it's going to be impounded. It's part of an investigation. We have to look into it.
One of them says, don't you care that your son just died today? I think Sipowicz. And she just turns around and goes right to Simone and was like, I need to see the car. I needed to see it. And she hasn't even thought about that her son has died.
When they're at the desk, she's like, I can't believe this. That car smells like B.O.
Yeah, yeah. And she's flipping a bitch. And I mean, she's having like a mental breakdown. Would you say that? Or she's having a moment and she doesn't know how to deal with it.
I think what she's doing is the only way she can mentally deal with this process is by
denial.
It's like a denial that he's dead. Yeah. It's a denial that he's dead, and just that she has to get the thing that she can connect to him, which is this car.
That they share, because that's all she talks about, if they both share the car.
And when she's down there, the guy who killed her son walks by, and she smells him. Keep in mind, during the confession, at one point, Simone kind of like leans back and sniffs, and he goes, "Do you smell me?" Like, he kind of stops in the middle of what he's talking about to go, "Do you smell me?"
And Simone says no, but I think he did.
Yeah, probably. And so she smells him, and then he goes, "Do you smell me?" And she's like, "You murdered my son." And he basically says, I'm God Almighty.
Yeah, and then that's where I think he's not crazy, because he said he wasn't going to talk.
You think if he was really crazy, he would have kept his silence?
Yeah, I think he would have, like, stuck to it. If he wasn't crazy, he would have stuck to it.
Yeah, maybe. I just think he's so crazy, like, at any point, you can't really expect him to do what he says he'll do.
I still think he's crazy.
He's just not that crazy?
No. I just think that was my one moment of, like, that made me, like, question.
Mm.
But then, like, the rest of the evidence I have makes me think he's crazy. If you get what I'm saying.
Fair enough. Now, the other stuff that's going on in this episode, we've already mentioned. Andy Jr. comes in halfway through and freaks out Sipowicz through the whole episode, well, through half the episode, thinking he got kicked out of the Air Force because of drugs or alcohol.
I just like the little, like, scene in the house when Sylvia says, she's, like, refilling the nuts. She's like, "This is the third refill. I'm not doing it again." Like,
or don't eat anymore. This is the third refill. Don't have any more.
Yeah. You've already eaten two of these. Stop it. It was funny. No, so he finally comes over. Sylvia tries to calm Sipowicz down. She's like, "Don't treat him like a skell."
And he sits down with him, and he just says, "Yeah, I tore my rotator cuff, so I can't be in the Air Force anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be a cop."
Yeah, he signed up to be a cop. And
that's the end of the episode. We're going to talk about one more thing, but that's how it ends.
He said it's because it's a good thing to be.
It's a good thing to be.
Stared deep into Sipowicz's eyes.
Now he's suddenly all about Sipowicz. I think because he turned his life around in a way.
Well, yeah, he saved him from that chick.
Yeah.
Who was going to take all of his money. And then he got him out of that jam. Even mm-hmm. though he didn't do anything wrong, he was still stuck in that jam. And he was able to get him out. And
he was super on top of it because he knows if he gets partially processed.
Yeah. It was going to fuck up his military.
Not even that. I was going to fuck up. Because anytime he goes in for a job, he has to write he was arrested. And even if there was no reason.
Which I think they've changed. They may have put it back, but I think Obama took it off forms.
That you have to say you've been arrested?
Arrested or a felon. But I think it might be back.
The question I had, which I said when we were watching. Do you think that Andy Jr. is a little bit special? Or touched? Or retarded?
Like high-functioning autism?
Because, seriously, the way he interacts with everybody in the show, and, like, the way he talks to people, and just his facial expressions, it kind of gives me the idea he might be a little touched.
No, I think they're trying to show you that he's, like, in awe of all of it. I think, so, it's based around, like, I mean, if we're going to talk, like, it's based around this group of people. And these group of people in this, like, the squad, like, they're the, like, the stars. So I think, like, he's, like, he looks at them like, oh, man, like, I get to learn from my dad, who's considered one of the best detectives in New York, even though he's got problems. And I get to learn from Simone. Like, I think
I get to learn from Batman?
Basically, yeah. Basically, because that's who they are on the show.
I don't know. Maybe
it's a French Portuguese Batman and a fat Robin.
You guys can tweet at me at Asher Bros Pod if you agree or completely disagree. I think there's a little bit of subtext to Andy Jr. that he's a little bit touched.
I don't think someone who's high functioning autistic or a little touched could be a police officer or be in the Air Force. Stupid's something different. That's something different.
Fair. Stupid is something different.
But I'm like...
Hashtag yeah. Kyle. That's a quote. Stupid is something different. Stupid is something
completely different. Or ignorant. Sorry, stupid may not be the word. Ignorance is something different than being touched slash having, like, autism. But
okay.
I just don't think he would be able to, like, have a gun. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Kyle, he's an American. His Second Amendment rights.
Being unfair to autistic people?
I don't know.
I'm not trying to be. But I just don't know.
I'll move on from there. So the other story in here is about a character that isn't a character. She's a real person named Vanessa Del Rio, who is a real porn star.
What's her porn star name?
Vanessa Del Rio.
Oh, is her real? Then does she use her real name in the show?
Mm-hmm.
Marianne.
I don't know if that's her real name. Her real name might be Vanessa Del Rio, and she just did porn under her real name.
I mean, all right.
And then they just gave her a fake name on the show. But
good for her, I guess.
Essentially, this very busty and, you know,
annoyed Latina.
She's a cartoony version of a human being. She comes in with problems of a person calling her and saying terrible things to her on the phone, stalkish things and whatnot. And Martinez gets the case. And by Martinez gets the case, he jumps at the opportunity to talk to this porn star.
Oh, dude. As soon as she walks in, he has, like,
raging bow.
He's ready to go. Can't see.
He also did that thing.
But he's, like, dipping back and forth, like, looking at her, like, and then she's like, oh, I'm here. I'm ready to go.
He also does that thing that I assume most porn stars have to deal with in real life. Where when a person knows who you are, but they're not 100% sure, so they stare at you.
Yeah, and then they do that, like, the small eyes.
Like, I assume some celebrities, like character actors and not as, like, big as stars do it, too.
I've done it before when I've seen people. I'm like...
Yeah, you do the... Because
at first you're not thinking you're going to see them. You know what I mean? When I was going through orientation at my job, Ice Cube walked by because they were filming on one of the streets, Law & Order SVU.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked by the window and we all I was sitting by the window and I kind of looked and I was like, you know, because I was like, wait, is that really Ice Cube? And then it dawned on me oh shit. And then my brain had to put it together. You know what I mean? I wasn't expecting him to be right next to me. That's all.
Damn.
So you need to process it. Yeah.
Well, he does that for her, and then he jumps up, and he's like, you know who you are? You're Vanessa Del Rio.
Yeah, and then he tells Donna. Donna wants to know.
Well, it's so weird, the idea that the guy basically goes, no, she's famous in the adult video world.
The best is it kind of shows Simone's colors.
Because Simone didn't know?
No, she walks by, and Simone does the thing that we're talking about. She walks by, and Simone looks at her, and then he goes, does a double take.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, it shows Simone's true colors for sure.
Martinez gets this case with Vanessa Del Rio. He looks into it.
He keeps talking about how much his friend
Manny
loves her.
Yeah, Manny's all about it.
He hasn't mentioned it necessarily to Vanessa Del Rio yet, but he constantly is mentioning how his friend really, really is into her.
Yeah. Because I guess the way it works is she put in a complaint with, the annoying callers hotline or some bullshit. And then they said, well, we have all the information on who's doing it, but we can't do anything until you talk to a detective. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we can't give you the information. We have to give it to a detective because it's a crime, I'm guessing. And so they have to, investigate the crime and make sure. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know the inner workings or the paperwork involved.
So he gets the info and he's like, oh,
I wouldn't be writing the fives.
You wouldn't be writing the fives on this. So
that's a deep cut.
They find out who it is. And it's a guy named Rick Hart. And she goes, Rick Hart, he shows up at all my appearances. He's a big fan. And he's like, yeah, well, I guess he is. Blah, blah, blah.
She basically says he's a bitch.
Yeah, she said I could take him in a fight.
She's basically like Rick Hart, this little bitch.
And
Rick Hart is a low, I think that actor, when you meet him, I think his character choice was low budget Rick Moranis from Ghostbusters.
So here's the thing I wanted to talk about in regards to that. They go to see this Rick Hart guy, and Martinez and Medavoy go. They get out of the car, and they start talking about basically how they both know who this woman is, and they've seen her films. Then Medavoy is like, well, how'd she look? And he goes, well, she's no kid, but she's not bad either. And they, and then he's like, yeah, my buddy Manny, he snuck into a tit club. He smoked into a titty bar, and she was there performing, and he was in love with her ever since. Then when they talk to this Rick Hart guy, the only difference between these gentlemen is he has a deep fandom for her work, and he called her too much and was, like, weird and stalky.
I think he threatened her. I think that's a big difference.
Well, I don't think he threatened her. He just said, like, one day you'll be my property and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And he was just like, and she's like, okay, and hung up the phone. She's more annoyed than scared of this person, the way it seemed. Then they go after this fucking Rick Hart.
She's just that bad of an actor. You couldn't, like, there was some writing in there that was supposed to make her be. We looked at each other at one point. There was like a conversation between her and Martinez, where Martinez like comments on her beauty, and she says thank you awkwardly, like it's the last, like there was the, like, and she was like, a good actor would have made you like feel sympathetic for her, like she was feeling bothered by him, but yeah, she was just a bad actress.
Okay, so they go really hard on this Rick Hart guy, like really hard.
Yeah, it's like a lover scorned.
He basically...
They're not cops. They're more like, leave her alone. She's awesome.
They're all like, hey, we've all seen her beaver, bro. Okay? You don't get any right to be all about it.
I beat my meat to her just like you do. Hey, okay? And I can hold my shit together. You should too. That's basically what they were selling up.
I bought Latina Lovers 8 like every other guy on the block. And I watched that scene over and over again. So, and I don't call her.
Yeah, they
but
like,
when she comes into the station, I turn into a goddamn Tex Avery cartoon.
Oh my god, yeah. Dude, he's rock hard. The whole investigation. Sorry.
It's true.
Oh my god, and Lesniak's there just boner killing all day.
Well, that's the great thing. Like,
I do feel bad. Like, he's. Like, I mean, she didn't hear. I don't think she heard the Manny thing. So when she talks about, like, his penis being little Manny. And she overhears it. She's hearing it out of context.
Because, yeah, and even Vanessa Del Rio goes, oh, little Manny, that's your name for it?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I have a friend named Manny. And then at the end of the episode, after...
Oh, yeah, and then that's why she's like sitting across just staring at him.
Yeah, Lesniak gives him the crazy woman eyes because Vanessa Del Rio... said that to him, and then he gets like a thank you package from her that's just a headshot that says, for you and your little Manny, love,
it
Vanessa
says,
Del Rio.
True Detective Martinez,
and for your little Manny.
Yes, but it says True Detective Martinez. It is written out to him.
Well, that sparks up a debate where Lesniak goes, oh, this woman takes her clothes off and does all this thing on film, and then she's surprised when dudes act like that?
Yeah, she has a very, like, yeah, she's really angry for no reason.
Medavoy is like, well, come on, Lesniak, we're not all like that. He's like, yeah, well, I'm sure you wouldn't be too happy with the conversation you had with Martinez walking up to her place if she was listening in on that.
Yeah.
And now you're going to be like, okay, well, we're all not like that. And then when Manny shows up, Manny is the unapologetic pervert. The guy that, like...
Like, I don't think you get, like, real deep into who he is. I feel like he has, like, 4 kids. You know what I mean?
Manny has, like, 4 children?
Yeah, but he's, like, still into, like...
Porno?
Yeah.
He essentially gets the...
The picture, and he's, like, really into it.
Oh, yeah, he's all about
it. Like... into just a picture of this girl.
He's ready to go to the bathroom with it right now.
It bothers me that the photo is made out to Detective Martinez.
It bothers you a lot. And you've mentioned
it
all the time.
And then he's going to be like, yeah, I got this autograph. And it's like, no, you don't.
You're not Detective,
Detective Martinez has an autograph that mentions you, but as his penis. So really, you don't have shit.
Also, like you said, it's a guy you think has like four kids. Are you going to put that up in your house?
Yeah, are you going to run home to your wife and be like, babe, I scored the coolest picture we could put up somewhere.
Like, just the idea of, like, you run into a porn star you were really into when you were jacking off all the time as a teenager, and you're like, yeah, dude, I got her headshot and a signature. I'm going to frame it and put it up in my home. No, you're not.
I mean, unless he is single. I mean, Martinez is single.
I thought he was with Lesniak still.
Well, I mean, he's with Lesniak, but he, like, doesn't live with her. So I could see, like if Manny was a bachelor, him putting it up in his house. But I just think he has four kids.
So that, I mean, that ends the...
Yeah, it was a good episode. I really like the performance of the crazy man.
Yeah, he did a great job.
He was a really, really good... really, really good crazy man. He delivered his lines well. I enjoyed it.
The character was Rodney Wilston.
Wilston?
The guy who did the character was Monty Sharp.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But his real name was Monty Sharp. That's right.
Rodney Wellstone.
Wellstone.
And he did a great job. I thought it was a different guy, and I thought it would be unknown for, but it isn't. One
he's
more.
Great. I liked him.
I'll end with this. There's one more famous face in this, or should I say famous voice. The guy who plays the doorman is Dan Castagnoli. Let me butcher it some more. His name is Dan Castellaneta, who is the voice of Homer Simpson.
That's crazy.
And so that dude is well rich.
Have you ever seen the video of the woman who does Bart's voice? She's buying candy from a kid. She like walks up to the kid and she's like, hey, like what are you doing? Like selling for what? And she's like, oh, he's like, oh, do you like voices? Like, do you like Bart Simpson? And he's like, yeah, Bart Simpson's really cool. And she starts talking like Bart and he's just like, what? And then like dawns on him that she's, I don't know. It was just interesting.
That's a good one.
Anyways, but yeah, I didn't know, like, and I wouldn't think she did Bart Simpson's voice, not because it's sexist, but...
You just don't expect it.
Yeah, and I didn't expect him to be, like, because he doesn't sound like a big, dumb oaf, like Homer does.
Now that once I read that he was Homer, and I saw his face, I was like, oh, that is the dude that does Homer, because I remember seeing him doing it in an interview, and it's pretty nuts. Anyway, any final thoughts about this episode besides you liking the crazy guy who does a great job?
No, it was cool. I liked it. It's a good episode that shows like Andy building a relationship with his son.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is good. I like how they get along.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's also like it's a mended family relationship because he was a terrible alcoholic father for most of his life.
Yeah.
Anyway, yep. Every episode of Asher Brothers Podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast, and asherbrotherspodcast.com. It usually comes out every other Tuesday. We took a pretty big break due to some stuff we had to get done in our personal lives. But once again...
And then you came to New York and we didn't record.
That's true.
But that's fine. We had more fun.
We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, Instagram Asher Brothers Podcast. We are hopefully on a schedule now, so you can watch the episodes and send me notes about the episodes we're talking about, and I'll mention them. And
Hulu, you need a skip button.
Hulu has every episode of NYPD Blue on their website. If you go to Hulu, I'm pretty sure they have a 15-day free trial, and they also have shit tons of other stuff. So get Hulu for a while to at least watch NYPD Blue with us, and that's it.
That's a free plug.
Yeah, Hulu. You ain't paying us shit to tell people to go buy your stuff, but it's fine. Whatever. We get it.
It's cool. Don't bother me.
Peace, everybody. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. The only footnotes I really have for this episode is Vanessa Del Rio's real name is Anna Maria Sanchez, so she is playing herself using her porn name and her real name on the show. I guess that's kind of admirable. It's just a little weird and 100% true. Anyway, if you need more NYPD Blue fix, there's always Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, There's the book True Blue that talks about the real life stories from Bill Clark, the detective and consultant on the show. They talk mostly about the first two seasons. And we have the next two episodes after this recorded, so if you want to send in your notes to be mentioned in the footnotes, you can, or notes for the episodes after that to be featured in the episode. Have a good one. Keep listening. Keep watching. Get Hulu to watch it if you could, or just spam the 15-day free trial to watch the whole thing. Peace.